What I'm talking about here is a radical extension of childhood, principally through schooling at first, but in time through every institution, including and especially popular entertainment under direction of a small elite. Popular entertainment, of course, removes the necessity to entertain oneself. But once again, we need to reiterate that childishness is not an objectionable quality to management, but rather its very justification for being. Childish people are unable to offer effective resistance to management. They may whine, complain, even shoot one another, but they have no idea how things work. So eventually they come to heel or break. Childish people, for all the noise they can make, are nearly helpless. They fall back in line because they have no other choice. They lack the inner resources to be self-sustaining. Through the second half of the 19th century, beginning in the North German states of Prussia, Saxony, and Hanover, a science of making young people childish grew up. It was studied by certain prominent Americans like Horace Mann, William Torrey Harris, the Peabody family, J.P. Morgan in Canada by Edgerton Ryerson, and by others who envied the control it offered to management and wanted that control for themselves. With the rise of the centralized corporate economy a quarter century after the Civil War, another overriding reason to place the population under tight management arose. But before I tell you about that one, which is big time, we need to get a few red herrings out of the way. At the same time this project was going, other groups besides businessmen and political leaders, had reasons to advocate against intellectual education and education in personal competence. Utopian socialists like Robert Owen and John Ruskin thought that through an endless childhood, an agrarian utopia could be achieved. The evolutionary crowd like Darwin, Galton, and Herbert Spencer thought that most of us were biologically retarded and couldn't grow up, so we had to be cared for. It would only make trouble to allow people to try to grow up. Scientific historians like Hegel or Herder and Marx thought that by keeping people dumb and incomplete, history itself could finally be controlled by small elites and guided to a conclusion. There were others too, but we don't need to review them all here. I wanted you to know that there were plenty of potent interests around that wanted the public childish, but none of them had any resources. None of them had the resources of corporations to sustain a campaign in that direction. For a long time, it only required a little corporate financing done behind the scenes to allow an army of innocent academic and philosophical screwballs to do the corporate government bidding unknowingly, thinking they were riding their own hobby horses. I personally was put on the trail of radically extended childhood paid for by business by reading the works of a man named Elwood Cubberley, who was a friend of Dr. Conan at Harvard. And he was Alexander Inglis's partner at Houghton Mifflin, the publisher, where he edited the elementary school series of textbooks while Inglis managed the secondary series. Houghton Mifflin, if I pronounce that correctly, and if I don't, my apologies to the Houghton and Mifflin family, they had a monopoly on books about institutional schooling. If you wanted to read about supervision or financing or classroom technique, you bought a book from the Houghton Mifflin series for several decades, the key decades, when the institution was brand new. Cubberley was also dean of teacher education at Stanford University, And while there, he became head of a thing called the Education Trust, a shadowy cabal of academics nationwide who controlled every major administrative post in America by 1918. Once again, my source of this information is no conspiracy book. It's the very conservative graduate education school textbook called Managers of Virtue by David Tyack, T-Y-A-C-K, a well-respected volume that's been in print for years. All the administrative jobs in North America were under the control of a group that called itself the Education Trust until the newspapers got wind of it, and then they submarined into a new... In 1906, Cubberley had written in his Ph.D. thesis at Columbia Teachers College that in the new school's coming, this is a direct quote, children are to be shaped and fashioned like nails, and the specifications will come from business and government in that order. If you're skeptical, and I encourage skepticism, I guess the librarian at this university can borrow Cubberley's Ph.D. thesis fairly easily so that you can read these words for yourself. Specifications, of course, the word is a term for outcomes desired, and how those outcomes were to be reached was up to academics and bureaucrats who worked for the policy people. It's a strategy that in business is known as management by objectives. You say, I want you to be in this place at this time. I don't care how you get there. A few years later, in 1919, the same Elwood Cubberley was writing that childhood had been deliberately extended by 4 years because a combination of powerful interests had demanded this. The trick was pulled off by denying children association with the adult world and with real responsibility through comprehensive confinement schooling, which created a world of children separate from the real world. There, the little human resources could be held until summoned or not summoned. It isn't very hard to see that the interest served most directly by delaying personal sovereignty is something we can fairly call the managerial outlook. Total management and human independence are mutually contradictory terms. Once professionalized, management finds it irresistible to argue that neither children nor their parents can be trusted, that the only sensible way to handle growing up is through expert goal setting and professional interventions at public expense. What I've tried to do here in my crude way is to show you that once the institutional infrastructure is established, nobody has to know what it's about. They have to know that they don't get their paycheck unless they keep the system in a steady state. So that eventually, all the architects who know what's going on could die off, and the thing becomes a piece of autonomous social technology.